Well, the Equal Employment Opportunities Commissioner is sounding warnings around gender inequalities in the government's COVID-19 economic stimulus response. Sa'anoa Mali'i, Dr. Karanina Sumeo, is questioning why, when women have been disproportionately affected by the crisis, the initiatives aimed at boosting the economy are skewed towards jobs that are dominated by a male workforce. She says the government can do better and is recommending a rebalancing through things like gender quotas, upping childcare subsidies, providing more online opportunities, and signing contracts with a living wage. The government's currently working through a list of more than 1,000 so-called shovel-ready projects, with the industries at the centre of these typically dominated by male workers. This despite the fact that the industries most impacted by COVID-19 employed high numbers of female workers. Dr. Karanina Sumeo, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Kalosa Catherine, thank you for having me on.
Did the government really have any alternative but to fund big infrastructure projects, which we saw were so important for the economy around the Christchurch rebuild? Is it an obvious place to go for a quick-ish hit?
They do have other places to go. Our health system, you know, where the workforce is, you know, over 80% are women, you know, our social sector, our NGO sector, where women are basically helping keep the country running. I mean, they do have options. And why they didn't invest as much there, I don't understand, and I'm hoping that there's a plan to it all. But they have missed an opportunity, Catherine, to address the social sector. And also, if they are going to invest in the physical infrastructure, then they need to make sure that there are targets there for employers to attract women into those occupations. So, I mean, they're not short of options in terms of where to concentrate.
Well, let's stay with that in the first instance, because a lot of the infrastructure work obviously is going ahead, and we also have the likes of the Climate Change Commissioner saying, for goodness sake, if you're going to spend billions, make sure you deal to some of the transitions we have to make there. You mentioned making sure if the investment is going in there, then at least make sure it's accompanied by initiatives to what? Increase the number of female workers in many of these fields, or in allied fields, jobs that might be allied to the work?
Ideally, it would be good. I mean, we teach our children, we teach our girls that they can do anything, and we teach our boys that girls can do anything. So if there are opportunities in those shovel-ready programs for them to include targets where they can recruit girls into apprenticeships, women, I mean, if we look, Catherine, if we look below that, we don't just have a gender inequity in New Zealand. We have a racial inequity in New Zealand. So just to remind everyone, you know, when the unemployment rate was around 4.2 for the general population back in March, for Māori it was 8.7, for Pacific it was 7.9. And then your underutilization rate for both those populations are really, really high. So if we're looking at a potential unemployment rate of 10%, just approximate, we can almost double that for both those groups alone, not looking at the other ethnic minorities as well. So we need to find and create opportunities in whatever project is going and set targets not only on a gender basis, but on an ethnic basis. That march that had yesterday, people going and breaking our social distancing rules, that wasn't just a message about what's happening in America. That's a cry for what's happening in New Zealand. And our leaders, our business leaders, our political leaders must listen to that call. We don't just have a gender inequity problem, we have a racial inequity problem when it comes to employment and economics.
You could add another, and that is youth, which I understand is also disproportionately represented in the early and sizable job losses we've had as well. So is what you're saying, first look not only where you are going to be investing these billions, but also how you do it, and to make sure that you have got measures in place to ensure it doesn't exacerbate inequalities?
Absolutely. So I've had a brief look at what's happening in Europe around gender budgeting, and keeping in mind it's only gender, they're not focused on ethnicity. And even when they've written it into law, like in Austria and Belgium, unless you actually train up our policy people our researchers and everyone, if you train them up into thinking through those different lenses, it's really easy to revert to status quo when they're in a rush to do things. So we've heard from Minister Gender that he had asked Treasury to apply some gender budgeting and gender lens across the budget process, and was basically told, not now. You know, which is really, it's a terrible way to treat women and to treat our women's minister. So there is a lot of work that we need to do. We need to not just do it in terms of initiatives. We need to actually legitimize it in law so there's no discretion about it. And then we need to train up all our policy people and our research people, both in the public and private sector, our human resources people, so that they can apply this diversity lens, if I can put it in that way, Catherine, so they can apply this diversity lens when they're making plans for our economy and for our recovery going forward.
So the Minister for Women's Affairs was actually told that, not now, in this budget round.
That's essentially what she was told. So it's not like she didn't ask for it, but that's essentially what she was told. That was in the Herald article that was printed earlier in May, I think. Yeah.
The question is, if not now, then when? Because this, again, is the same to reference the Climate Change Commissioner. When you are going through a massive transition forced upon you, and when you are spending a generation's worth, two generations' worth of public funds, surely that is the time where you lock in the now. It's the time to do it.
Absolutely. It's now. What are we waiting for? You know, it's now. For example, the living wage. You know, so many of our essential workers are not even on the living wage. And again, I can throw in our women, our Māori and Pacific women. And yet we can afford to put $2.12 billion in the super fund for the next financial year. You know, we're so worried about that in the future, and we've got people now who can't make it through the week. So sometimes our priorities are in the wrong place. I mean, I'm worried about my retirement fund, so is everybody. But we've got children still living in poverty and more children living in poverty. So we have to make those, you know, those judgment calls. And I do think that sometimes we lose sight of some of those basic things that we talk about as New Zealanders, about equality, about discrimination, about fairness, about our children. And we need to come back to basics, and this is the time to do it. Not when we've recovered, because some of us may recover, but the rest of us, we have gone into worse situations, and it's not fair. It's not the New Zealand that we want.
Do you have a comment around the so-called two-tier welfare system that was announced with the special rate of welfare support for those who have had COVID-related job losses?
My comment is, it's unfair and it's discriminatory. Those are the two words I would assign to it. I understand the rationale that's been handed down, but it's not fair to those who are already at the bottom, struggling along with their children, that they have to wait again for a next budget or whatever the next review is.
On the question of the stimulus packages, what are some of the areas you believe are being missed, where investment could go in? You've mentioned things like ensuring contracts have the living wage, for example. You've mentioned ensuring you are looking at your gender balance, your ethnicity balance, your age balance when it comes to hiring. But what are other areas where direct investment could make a difference and help balance that gender skew?
I mean, the obvious area is in early childhood. You know, increasing the number of hours that are subsidised so that women can be can have more choice in terms of getting into work or going into study or working longer hours. I mean, that's the main difference between men and women, just using the sex categories, not the gender, where women are still carrying the load of looking after our children, looking after our families. So subsidising that care in some way would be able to free up women to engage in paid work. So I'm not saying that our work at home is not important, but in paid work so that they can live a decent life with their family. So that would be a pretty key one, looking at payments for what we consider, you know, private work, which is caring for our families and caring for our children. And we know with our families and members with, we have a disability, but that also means that someone else is home caring for them. So those two areas are pretty obvious, Catherine, to me. And if we can address those areas, that would be one, that would be a key one. The other thing that we've learned in terms of the lockdown is by everybody working from home, that some jobs actually can be done from home, but not all of us have the technology or can afford the internet connection to do that. So that may be another area that government can look at investing in. And we learned that when we thought all the kids would be able to zoom into their classes, and they couldn't, because some of them didn't have access to the internet or didn't have the technology. If we can invest in our households with those needs, that will enable them to engage in the labour force more easily. And they don't always have to be physically present at the different employments. They can work from home. So those are things that I think they could easily look at and invest in, because it would help our workers, our older workers. It would help people who don't have a driving licence, who can't afford travel. It will help on many levels. So, yeah, those would be two obvious things, Catherine. Aside from fair pay agreements that we've been calling for, pay transparency, secure employment, and union membership, especially for women and our ethnic minorities. Because union membership isn't always high in a lot of our industries, aside from the public sector. And that's where a lot of our low-paid workers are right now.
Fa'afetai, thank you very much for your time. That is Aonua Ma'ali'i, Dr. Karanina Sumeo, who is the Equal Opportunities Commissioner.